It's a bonus.
It's a bonus episode. Welcome to a bonus episode
at the Bitter End Podcast. Hey, how you doing? I'm Tom Denny.
Should we start recording now that we've finished doing the embarrassing singing bit? Like, we don't
Fuck yeah.
All right, I'll press record now and we can go in and then we'll make sure that nobody hears that awful singing bit.
Okay, fantastic. Hello and welcome to the Bitter End Podcast After Dark.
That's right, it is a bonus episode. This isn't the start of season 6. My name is Todd Jordan.
I am Tom Denny.
And we are here because something's happened.
What's happened? Why are we here? Why did you bring me here?
Do you remember back in season 2?
Planet Zeist, yes.
Yes, we were covering Highlander, including Planet Zeist in all its glory. Now, within that series, there was a regular feature where I was reading from the novelization of Highlander.
Storytime with Toddly T.
Yes.
Great section.
A paperback book that you got me as a lovely, lovely gift.
Mm.
So I've been reading this novel. I've sectioned it out so that I can read one chunk of the book per episode of this season of the podcast. And I just thought that we could have Todd's story time as I read Highlander the novel. Now, I have reached out to Gary Kilworth, author of this novel, because I'd love to speak to him about the process of writing it. Unfortunately, he has yet to get back to me. He's eluding me.
Now, a recurrent element of that was that we were desperately trying to get in touch with the author of said novelization, Mr. Gary Kilworth.
Mm.
And sadly, I was worried it was maybe a pen name or something because Mr. Kilworth was not responding to our messages.
Yeah, it was a bit of a bummer, but I mean, if he exists, he's busy, I guess.
Well, strap in, Dad.
Hey.
Gary Kilworth has gotten in touch.
What?
Yes, Gary Kilworth has heard our word and no word of a lie. He's in touch with the Bitter End podcast.
This is like over half a year after we were trying to get in touch with him.
Oh, yes. So I am here to tell you that Gary Kilworth is a super cool dude. He's just not massively tech savvy by his own admission. Mm. So he doesn't check his messages as often as you or I might. We were able to conduct a quick interview with Mr. Kilworth and I via email.
Okay. Email doesn't really work on a podcast, though.
No, it's not generally known as an audio format.
Mm.
So don't worry, guys. We didn't want you to miss out on the red hot Kilworth action.
Mm.
What we've done is we've gotten friend of the podcast, Mark Fraser, who you might recognize from his guest appearance on another Highlander show. I think it was Highlander Endgame.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yes, so Mark Fraser helped us watch Highlander Endgame. He's a podcaster in his own right. He does the brilliant show The Curator podcast, where he talks to fantastic musicians from all genres and does really, really cool in-depth interviews with them about their motivations and creativity. You should absolutely check out Mark's podcast, The Curator, on all podcast apps. He has been very, very kind as to be the voice of Gary Kilworth in a reconstruction of the interview.
Yes, that's awesome.
Now, there's two elements to stress here. One is that Mark Fraser is a Scottish gentleman.
Mm.
We feel the need to stress that Gary Kilworth is not a Scottish gentleman.
Mm.
The other thing is that I know that you're listening to this and you are thinking that this is bullshit and we've made it up, but I need to stress that no, this is absolutely real. This is 100% hand on heart real.
This is real. We would not come up with such a fucking weird deep cut into our own podcast to do as a bonus episode because we may be douchebags, but we are not that douchey. This is like legit. Like, I was like watching a show and I came out and looked at my phone and Todd had sent me a message being like, are you fucking ready for this? Gary Kilworth has gotten in touch. I was like, what? What? Well, here it is.
I promise you it's real. So, okay, it's a reconstruction. The beautiful, beautiful Scottish sultry tones that you will hear are the voice of Mark Fraser, but he's reading the emails exactly as written by Gary Kilworth. We will attempt to reconstruct the conversation for you now, so please enjoy.
Hi, Todd. I'm so sorry, but I've just found the message which you sent me 11 months ago. Yes, I am the writer of Highlander.
Hi, Gary. Thank you so much for getting in touch. first question. Could you just explain, how does the movie novelisation industry work?
I'm only surmising here because I'm no expert on the machinations of the movie industry. But it seemed to me that it helped with the publicity for the film to have the book come out at the same time as the film, as a double whammy. It doesn't cost the industry very much either, since I was paid a flat one-off payment for the work and never received any royalties as I do with a novel, which is all my own work. As payments go, it was not a great amount of money. I have earned 50 times as much for one of my own books.
Okay, so how did you come to write the Highlander novel?
The film company asked my agent, Maggie Noach, if she could recommend an author to do the novelisation. She chose me, though I'll never know if I was her first choice. I was given the dialogue script only. I've never written on a manual typewriter before or since, and the time frame was exhausting. There was no time for revisions. What went down on paper was the final manuscript.
Huh. Did you get to see the film first, or were you writing based on the screenplay?
Yes, they showed me the film in a cinema in Holborn, London. I watched it with my agent. We were the only members of the audience. I was blown away by the opening sequence, the Queen soundtrack and the clans coming over the hill. It sent shivers down my spine.
So, what did you think of the film when you first saw it?
I loved it. I was lost in the splendour of the clans and the sword fights and the music and the fantasy of it all. It blew me away.
Yeah, me too. What do you think it is about the Highlander story that makes it so interesting?
The plot doesn't make a lot of sense if you stand back and analyse it logically. But the romance, and I don't mean in the Hearts and Flowers sense, I mean in a literary sense of the word, of the story rarely fails to grip someone. MacLeod is a great character, and there's something about swords and the fact that it has to be the last man standing at the end which has you at the edge of your seat. There's humour as well as a drama. For example, the Under the Lake walk. And there's poignancy too, when he has to leave his various loves behind in time. The Kurgan makes an excellent villain. You hate him as soon as he appears in the scene. It has all these aspects and more.
So, how long did you have to write this book?
2 weeks, which is why there were no revisions, and why I collapsed into bed afterwards.
As a writer of historical fiction, how did you find it telling a story that spans multiple eras?
I have written a lot of time travel stories. My latest novel, which was out just a couple of months ago, spans multiple eras, as you'll see by the title. The Sometimes Spurious Travels Through Time and Space of James Ovett, available from all good online bookshops, especially Amazon, so it wasn't a difficult task for me, by any stroke.
How much artistic license were you allowed with your writing?
I was asked to stick fairly closely to the script until the ending. There were actually 3 different endings, I was told, and they didn't let me know which one they were going to use, so I just made up my own.
I gotta say, my favourite line in the book is something that doesn't feature in the film. When the Kurgan gets visited by Candy in his hotel room, he says,
"Poontang Tom, baby!"
I gotta ask, was that in the script, or did you add it yourself?
I think I made it up, but I can't be sure. I was pretty pleased with the line too.
So similarly, your book adds quite a bit of extra information about the characters at the ending. Again, was that your own contribution or something that was in the script but cut from the film?
You have to remember that the dialogue script only has speech in it. That's all I had to work on. That and what I'd seen just once when they showed me the film. The script was probably around 20,000 to 30,000 words. The novel had to be around 100,000 words. So my answer is, I created a huge amount of background information for the characters and created scenes that didn't exist in the movie. Otherwise, it would have been a very sparse little book.
In your book, you expanded a great deal on the Kurgan's backstory, including a really vivid section of his childhood involving the death of his father. I think it was a scene where he puts hot stones in his dad's throat and kills him, and he's all like... It's gnarly. Can you talk a little bit about your thought processes for writing this scene and how you got into the head of the character?
Sorry, Todd. It's been 30 years since I wrote the novelisation, and any deliberations on how I did it have been swamped by the 70-odd novels I've written since then. Each novel I write takes quite a lot of research, even science fiction and fantasy novels. I've just written a short story on a robot made of lead. he's supposed to be able to work more freely on a low-gravity planet like Mars or the Moon, not float about so much, and had to research the properties of the metal, how it came to be formed, the atmospheres and gravitational pull of the planets that he goes to. My point is, once I've finished the book I'm working on, I have to research the next one. And all that I've learned about the properties of lead disappears from my mind to make room for the next batch of information. I can't even remember what I felt like writing the Anglo-Saxon fantasy that I wrote last year, let alone 30 years ago. So, I'm very sorry, mate. I would love to give you something, but I'm just not able to.
Okay, real talk. Are there any scenes in the film that you think you wrote better than came across on screen?
In the main, I very much doubt I topped any of the action scenes. It's a very visual story, and one that relies on violent action, which is not easy to replicate in print. However, I will say that I think I did more justice with the love scenes and with the woman that Highlander took to his heart. I wanted him to not just find them sexually attractive, but really love them to the depths of his soul.
Did you ever see Highlander 2?
I never did see Highlander 2, though for no other reason than I was probably busy and it passed me by.
Right, okay. Highlander 2. But it's a very odd twist on the lore of the Immortals, and just really would love to know what you think of it as somebody so close to the story. In brief, the original version of the sequel reveals that the Immortals are all aliens from the planet Zeist, and that Connor MacLeod and Ramirez were banished to Earth as a punishment for leading rebellion. Needless to say, this slightly contradicts some elements of the original, not least the fact that Connor and Ramirez appear to not know each other when they first meet or even discuss their home planet. What the fuck's all that about? This is slightly tweaked in the director's cut of the sequel, where instead of being aliens, they are time travellers sent from the past into the future, still as a punishment. Doesn't make a great deal of sense. Do you have any thoughts on how or why this strange decision was made?
I'm not sure I like the idea that they came from another planet. I mean, simply because I prefer to think of them as being amongst us, now and always. Homegrown immortals. If you make them alien, it kind of demeans them. It turns them into something else other than fantastic human mortals. Part of the sense of wonder is imagining that we might be Connor MacLeod ourselves. We love to identify with our heroes. It's a lot more difficult to imagine ourselves as aliens when we know we're mortals. It's much easier to think that we might have an immortal buried in our human psyche somewhere. Filmmakers are always trying to put their own twist on their particular film. Turning the Highlander into an alien means he's not actually a Highlander at all. How can he be if he's an alien? The Scottish love this film simply because he's one of them, and if he's an alien, he isn't one of them. He's a Zeistian.
Highlander the book stands out as being pretty different from your body of work, as it's a novelisation of an existing movie. So, were you involved in any other movie novelisations?
Highlander was the only one. More or less at the same time that I was writing Highlander, my great friend and collaborator, Robert Holdstock, was novelising John Moorman's The Emerald Forest, and a beautiful job he did too, if you've ever read it. Neither of us got the chance to do another movie, and sadly Rob died in 2009, so we certainly won't do another. You never know, I still might get dragged out of semi-retirement. One can hope.
Would you have been tempted to write your own Highlander stories independent of the movie? If so, what would you have done with these characters?
Heck, that's a loaded question. I don't think I can answer the second part. I certainly would have written more Highlander stories if the copyright had permitted it, but of course, it was a franchise.
If you could write a novelisation of any film, what would your dream novelisation be?
One of my favourite films is Altered States. I'd do that in a flash if they asked me.
Thanks so much for all your time, Gary. So, last question. Do you have any advice for wannabe writers?
I left school at 15 without any exams, and my English was appalling at the time. However, despite that, I had a great passion to be a story writer. I loved to create strange tales and kept writing and writing. I have 50 stories and 4 novels from the period before I was published, which are still in my sock drawer, and I never gave up. If you want to be a writer, you have to swallow great lumps of disappointment and keep on writing because you love the pure act of creating a tale. My advice would be useless to someone who isn't an addict of the written words. You've got to be passionate about story writing and to do it for the sheer joy of it, rather than the desperation of wanting to be published. I wrote from the age of 12, and my first publication came at the age of 36. There were many years in the wilderness, which bothered me not at all.
And that's it, guys. That is the end of our interview with Mr. Gary Kilworth. What an amazing guy.
Yeah, thanks so much, Gary, for getting back in touch with us and giving us an insight into this most obscure but like very important to us bits of literature and movie paraphernalia.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of love from the Kilworth camp over here. So it was a long time coming, but it was worth the wait.
Damn right, yeah.
And thanks again to Mark Fraser of the Excellent Curator podcast for being the voice of Gary Kilworth during our reconstruction.
Yeah, it's been unconventional, but we hope you enjoyed it. We hope it gave you a bit more insight into the crazy land of Highlander.
All right, so we are still on our break. We will see you soon for Season 6, Police Academy. Until then,
may God have mercy on your souls.